You're listening to Stateside. I'm Lester Graham. A new study finds reducing air pollution by just a little more would save about 9,000 lives each year in the U.S. Detroit is one of the cities the study finds could benefit the most from slightly tighter air pollution regulations. Kevin Cromar is the lead author of the study. He's an assistant professor at the NYU School of Medicine, and he joins us by Skype. Let's start with the basics. What kind of air pollution is the biggest concern?
We looked at ozone as well as particulate matter pollution. And depending on where you live, either ozone or particulate matter can have the strongest health impacts.
What kind of health problems do these pollutants cause or make worse?
Typically, they increase the risk of both cardiovascular and respiratory health outcomes. And these can be so severe, they can actually lead to increased risk of premature death. Outside of mortality, we also see increased risk of hospital admissions and emergency department visits, increased risk of heart attacks. And then on the lower end of the scale, we see where people can get sick that makes them not able to go to work or to school. And we're concerned with these health impacts as well.
That gets to the economics of this, and I want to talk about that later. But let's talk about what are the sources of these pollutants. I know we talk about ozone, ground-level ozone, quite a bit. We talk about fine particulates from diesel and from coal-burning power plants. But a lot of those have been seeing tighter restrictions, particularly diesel fuel. So what more can be done?
Yeah, that's a good question. So these pollutants come from a wide variety of sources, on-road sources, area sources like our homes and our buildings, point sources, industrial activity and power generation. The specific sources of pollution in each city is slightly different. And so really this report doesn't focus too much on prescribing what should be done to fix the problem. We recognize that these problems are unique in each city, and so the solutions to it will actually need to be city-driven and unique as well.
So we usually rely on state agencies or the Environmental Protection Agency to deal with these kinds of pollutants. What can cities do locally?
If you were interested in knowing what the air pollution levels were in your community, there's a great number of resources you can go to find that information. But if you want to know the health impacts of those levels of air pollution, there wasn't any information readily available to you, both for the public or for the air quality managers who have to make such important decisions. This report, we hope, will be a source of reliable information that can inform the ongoing discussions on what cities should do. Every city is a little bit different, like I mentioned. We hope that the public and air quality managers can really work together to make plans that best suit both the needs and the preferences of the local communities they serve.
Of course, there are some cities who actually are downwind of other major cities, and they can't do much about the ozone problems or the fine particulates that drift into their town if the other city isn't doing much on its part. What can be done? I mean, this is not totally a local problem. This is something that can be caused by a city hundreds of miles away.
Oh, absolutely. If you look at the maps in the report that show the pollution levels across the country, you can see that pollution often is a regional problem. And for any one given jurisdiction, your options might be limited. So there's no way that you could control all the pollution down to zero. In the Detroit area, we found that the particle pollution levels were just slightly higher than levels recommended by the American Thoracic Society. And even making a small improvement in the particle pollution levels, we see has a dramatic impact on public health. The level recommended is 11. Detroit was somewhere around 11.3. And that small difference was approximately 21 additional deaths per year.
The Detroit metro area landed as 16th on the list of cities that could benefit from further air pollution restrictions. There's been a lot of concern about the southwest part of Detroit in many reports in the past. When Michigan faced ozone alerts just last week, the Department of Environmental Quality talked about voluntary measures such as not topping off the tank when you're filling your vehicle, not using gas-powered or two-cycle, two-stroke lawnmowers. Are voluntary efforts enough to solve this problem and maybe make that difference between 11 and 11.3? As you pointed out in your study.
In terms of short-term interventions the public takes to try and reduce short-term risk, that's probably not going to lower the annual levels too much. What it will do is hopefully reduce the peak levels on specific days. There really needs to be coordinated planning on how can we reduce these pollution levels over the long term, in addition to those great efforts to reduce pollution in the short term.
Let's hone down on that just a little bit, because cities don't often have regulatory powers that state agencies or the EPA does, as I mentioned before. So what can a city do?
There's no restrictions in the Clean Air Act that prevent cities to take actions on their own accord. The federal air quality standards are applied at the county level. And then states are responsible to put together a plan for any county that doesn't meet federal air quality guidelines. So that's a formalized process that's made a big difference in air quality over time.
Oh, we talk about ordinances banning traffic levels. I mean, I'm just trying to imagine what that might look like.
One example I can give you is in New York City. We worked with the mayor's office and other organizations to try and reduce the sulfur content of heating oil in buildings. Now, that's a very specific source of pollution. Most parts of the country don't have heating oil in their buildings. But just by that passing two policies to reduce sulfur content, New York City experienced the cleanest wintertime air quality they had in 50 years. The solutions need to be city-specific, and with some collaborative effort, I really think it's possible to make small improvements in air quality that can make a big difference in public health.
Now, we're talking about lives here, but you know, while we're talking about health problems, often these concerns come down to economics. What kind of costs to the economy would tighter restrictions mean versus additional health care costs that we pay as a result of this air pollution?
This report doesn't explicitly show the economic costs or benefits.
Well, there have been plenty of studies that do look at that, though. I'm sure you're familiar.
Absolutely. And I think that economic considerations are critical in making any policy decisions. That's why I alluded to earlier that every city has different preferences where they want to invest their resources. This report is not meant to shame any city. It's not meant to necessarily compel cities that they must take action. What it's intended to do is provide accurate numbers that can be used as part of that discussion on how cities can best meet their preferences and priorities. But absolutely, there's economic costs to improving air quality, and there's economic costs for not improving air quality. So that's an important consideration that cities need to keep in mind.
Kevin Cromar is the lead author of the study, Estimated Excess Morbidity and Mortality Caused by Air Pollution Above the American Thoracic Society Recommended Standards. We have links to the study on our website at michiganradio.org. Dr. Cromar, thanks very much.
Thank you so much. I appreciate your time.